and he's not going to give us that thing because he knows.
Love Talk Radio.
Yeah. Just always, always, always be thankful. So just stay tuned. We're gonna have another guest come on here, talking about the vaccines, talking about a lot of great, interesting things, a lot of great information coming up right here, Freedomizer Radio. Thanks for joining me today, guys. Have a wonderful, thankful day, and I will talk to you tomorrow.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars' dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
Welcome. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts, vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips and Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brook, who will be joining us in just a few minutes. Welcome. It's Thursday. Gosh, what is it? May 2nd, I believe. We're already into the month of May. Pleasure to have you with us. This is a combined show with Freedomizer Radio and Homeopathy World Community Radio. We're delighted to have you with us today. I am vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, speaking to you from Asheville, North Carolina. And we spend the first half hour of this show talking about questions people have had about vaccine rights. And I'm going to go right into that in just a minute or two. Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brook will be joining me at the half hour mark. And we'll talk about vaccine news at that point. And there is a lot of news to talk about today, as there seems to be every week. This is just an incredibly active subject and active arena. And we'll do our best to keep you up with at least some of the more important points of that. A lot of important things going on right now. Well, I had somebody email me recently asking whether or not employer-required vaccines. And let me pause for just a second to elaborate on that point. 2 or 3 years ago, I started getting calls in the fall from healthcare workers around the country who were being required to get flu shots in order to keep their jobs. And that's a whole separate topic I want to elaborate on in detail right now today. But the Department of Health and Human Services at the federal level, there are many states that also have Departments of Health and Human Departments of Health and Human Services, but at the federal level, the Federal Department of Health and Human Services has something that they're calling Healthy People 2020, and it's an initiative where they've listed different goals, many, many different health-related goals for the country. One of those goals is to vaccinate 90% of healthcare workers. Now, this is not singling out healthcare workers to pick on them in particular so much as it is actually a preliminary step to a much broader agenda. The Department of Health and Human Services wants to vaccinate not only healthcare workers with the flu shot, but also all U.S. employees with a flu shot. Well, they want to vaccinate everybody, adult, child, and otherwise, with the flu vaccine who's 6 months old or older. But there's an explicit goal to vaccinate healthcare workers and to vaccinate all the rest of the employees in the U.S. with a flu vaccine, to make that a condition of employment. So when we talk about healthcare workers, because that's the arena that is really being focused on right now. I have started hearing from people in other professions, in particular the food industry, but right now the primary focus has been on healthcare workers, and I've heard from healthcare workers all over the country being required to get flu shots in order to keep their jobs, and occasionally other vaccines, the Tdap or Dtap, or hepatitis B, occasionally MMR. There are some other vaccines in there. I mean, there's always another vaccine to give someone. Once they get healthcare workers vaccinated with the flu vaccine, then they'll start adding other vaccine requirements as well. So there's no end to that sequence of events. There's no light at the end of that tunnel. But the main focus is with the flu vaccine. And the point is that once they get most of the healthcare workers vaccinated with the flu vaccine, and they won't mention, by the way, that this is over their objections, many, many healthcare workers, perhaps a majority of them, based on polls taken during the swine flu pandemic, where a majority of healthcare workers did not want the swine flu vaccine. But a significant number, if not even a majority of healthcare workers, don't want the flu shot. Most of them will go ahead and get it in order to avoid the potential conflicts or difficulty of trying to come up with a way to avoid it. But in any case, healthcare workers are being required to get flu shots. And so someone emailed me and said, and asked, well, if an employer mandates a flu vaccine, and most of the mandates are coming from the employer as a matter of policy as opposed to a state law requirement, but there are more and more states are putting up bills that, if passed, would mandate at the state law level healthcare workers and other employees to get vaccinated. So look for more of those laws to come down the pike around the country if we are not able to organize a coherent objection at a level and in such a manner that it would prevent those bills from being passed and becoming law. But if an employer mandates a vaccine and the employee gets that vaccine to keep their job, and then the employee has some severe adverse reaction to the vaccine, in the employment arena, wouldn't that create a workman's compensation issue? Could the employee then file a workers' compensation claim? And I think the answer to that is no. Now, workers' compensation laws are going to vary from state to state, the particular details. And I'm not a workers' compensation attorney. I don't deal with that in my practice and never have. And so I don't have any detailed information about state law in my own state or anywhere else about workers' compensation laws. But the issue here is really one outside of the details of any state's workers' compensation laws, because we have federal laws that create the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program that require anybody getting a vaccine that's listed in that program, and that would include routine flu vaccines, as far as I know, that if you have an injury, you've got to go through the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, that you can't go to court. And I think that law, because it's federal law, and federal law is a higher legal authority than state law, the federal law would supersede state-level worker compensation laws. So I think the short answer there to what I turned into a very long question with the additional details about what's going on in the U.S. today and where we're heading is that I don't think workers' compensation laws are relevant here or would apply here. I think if an employee gets a employer-mandated flu shot or a state law-required employee flu shot and has an injury or adverse reaction, that their recourse is going to be the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. You file a petition with that program alleging that a vaccine caused an injury, and then depending on the type of injury and all the details, the evidence and so forth, you may or may not ultimately get compensation. Historically, that program, which has been operating from the late 1980s, mid to late 1980s, has paid out compensation to roughly a quarter of the people who have petitioned for compensation. The program was designed to be faster and easier than going through state courts, and was designed to protect the pharmaceutical industry because they were on verge, the vaccine part of the pharmaceutical industry was on the verge of going out of business. Vaccine manufacturers were pulling out of vaccine production because the death and injury caused by vaccines was too expensive for them. And so what we ended up with is a situation where the federal government subsidizes vaccine research and development to the tune of billions of dollars each year. The federal government has passed laws making vaccine manufacturers and others connected with the administration of these routine vaccines immune from liability. The federal and state health departments purchase vaccines. The federal government pays for the injury and death caused by vaccines for those who are lucky enough to get through the system and actually get some compensation. This is an incredible racket. There's no other industry that I'm aware of anywhere in the U.S. or in the world that has this kind of a setup where the government's going to pay them to develop the product, it's going to buy the product, it's going to make them immune from liability, and then the state and federal governments require everybody to get vaccinated, and there are more laws being passed to require more people to get vaccines and to require children and others who are already required to get vaccines to get more vaccines. I don't care what you think about vaccines, whether they're safe and effective or not. This is a racket. This is an incestuous relationship between industry and government. This has to stop. This needs to stop, and it's not going to stop unless we take steps to become active. So the simplest and best way to do that, I mean, everybody, the first step, of course, has to be awareness of the problems with vaccines, awareness of the underlying corruption, awareness of the conflicts of interest. But just being aware of all that isn't necessarily going to change anything. So I think one of the arenas where we have to become active is the legislative arena. The simplest way and best way to do that is to go to the National Vaccine Information Center's advocacy portal. It's nvicadvocacy.org. N-V as in Victor, I-C, advocacy.org. And go there and sign up. It's free to sign up, and you plug in your information, and it tells you who your state representatives are, and you can get alerts when there's an action item in your state. But you can also just go to the homepage without signing up at all and look down, and there's a list of most of the current vaccine bills. And right now there's about, gosh, close to 100 bills in over 30 states. That's anywhere from 1 to 6 bills or more per state. This is an incredibly active legislative issue, vaccines, all different kinds of bills that would require more people to get vaccines to be gotten by those who are already getting them, allow pharmacists to administer vaccines, increase vaccine tracking with state registries, allow children to consent to vaccines, which is a blatant violation of the U.S. Constitution, but states are passing laws to do that anyway. Just all kinds of stuff out there. And if we're not paying attention, then we have only ourselves to blame later when all of our rights have been taken away, we're all mandated to get vaccines and don't have any way out of it. And that's the direction that laws are going. So we have to become active if we want to see something else happen. So let me pull myself off of the soapbox there and get back to some other rights questions. People often ask me from time to time over the years, they say, if we don't attend a church or never have, should we start attending one in terms of, will that help us get a religious exemption? Now, when people say exemptions, most people are thinking about kids enrolling in schools and exemptions for kids in school, but, you know, there are over a dozen different categories and subcategories. So there's military members and families and civilian contractors and immigration requirements, and that pertains also to foreign adoptions. Of course, I've been talking about healthcare workers and all different kinds of school contexts, homeschool, military school, private schools, religious schools, college and university and so forth. So there's many different categories and subcategories. But when people talk about religious exemptions, what the legal boundaries are arguably the same just about in any context or anywhere in the U.S. Now, the specific procedure is going to vary from state to state or context to context, whether you have to, for example, state your beliefs or what have you. You know, that varies from state to state or context to context. But the question was, someone asked, should I join a church? And underlying this question is the idea of whether or not, first of all, you have to be a member of an organized religion to have a religious exemption. And if you do, Or even if you don't, you know, does it help you to join a church? Well, one of the ways that we know what the legal boundaries are, in fact, the primary way, is that we look to legal precedent. Legal precedent comes from actual court cases. Some courts, not all courts, but some courts, when they rule in a case, they have the option of writing what's called a published opinion about the case they just ruled on. Here's our ruling in the case. Here's the legal reasoning we use to get to this end result. And if they write that published opinion, it becomes legal precedent. And legal precedent is nothing more than a point of reference in the law. Here's how this particular law applies to this set of facts. Because let's face it, a lot of laws are written in such a way that it's not obvious exactly how they apply. There's no way that laws can be drafted in a way that they cover every hypothetical future instance or situation or circumstance that may come up concerning any particular law. So it's sort of, it's an inherent aspect of our legal system that we're going to have situations, and then attorneys see this all the time in practice, where a client walks through the door, they've got a situation, and it's not necessarily always clear even what the law is that applies or how the law that relates to their situation does apply. So we look to legal precedent to help us answer that question. And there's a fair amount of legal precedent in state and federal courts that gives us an idea of where the boundaries are with vaccine religious exemptions. And by the way, when we say religion or religious exemption, a lot of people think in fairly common sense terms, think of those words somewhat narrowly as opposed to how the law defines them. So for purposes of vaccine religious exemptions, the bottom line is, with a couple of minor exceptions, you don't have to be a member of an organized religion. And in fact, there's legal precedent. There was a federal court case where parents joined a church to get the exemption, and the court said, no, that's insincere, and they lost the exemption. So not only do you usually not need to be a member of an organized religion, because under federal law, the First Amendment's free exercise clause that refers to the free exercise of religion, under federal law, it doesn't matter whether or not you're a member of an organized religion, and it doesn't matter what church you belong to if you do. It's your personal religious beliefs. You can be the only one on the planet with your particular religious beliefs. But if those beliefs are religious in nature, as the law defines that, but the law defines it quite broadly in the sense that it doesn't matter whether or not it's connected with an organized religion. If your beliefs are religious in nature, and if they are sincerely held, and that's an objective standard, the sincerity requirement. Somebody can't say, well, that person sounds suspicious to me, so I don't think they're sincere, and we're going to reject it. Or they can't properly do that. People, of course, can do anything they want to. The question is, can they get away with it? But theoretically, no, they can't do that, or they can't properly do that. It has to be an objective standard. You know, if you're down at the bar last week, sitting at the bar stool, talking to the person next to you, and you say, you're slamming a few down and getting a little tipsy, and you say, there's no way I'm getting that vaccine. I'm just going to make up a bunch of religious beliefs and try to get out of it. And it turns out the person you're talking to is the director of the human resources department where you work, or the school nurse at your child's school, or something else like that. You know, that would be, I'm being a little facetious, of course, but my point is that if there's some clear objective measure or means by which somebody can say, yes, this person is insincere, then no, your religious exemption probably is not going to hold up. But if it's sincere and religious in nature, it has the protection of the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, wherever you are in the country. Now, it gets a little more complicated where some state laws on the books, as they're written today, still say that you have to be a member of an organized religion. Now, laws like that have been challenged in court around the country at least four or five times, and every time they've been challenged in court, the court has said these laws are unconstitutional. So there's pretty clear precedent in state and federal courts around the country that a state cannot properly require you to be a member of an organized religion to qualify for religious exemption. But until the remaining states that have those kinds of laws, and there's at least three or four of them, maybe more, a handful of states, as long as those laws are still in the books, they are arguably enforceable. Because a law is not unconstitutional just because somebody thinks it is, or even because a similar law in another state was held to be unconstitutional or ruled to be unconstitutional by a court. Laws are presumed to be constitutional unless and until a court says otherwise, and so the law is still enforceable. Now, you can certainly make an argument, and I've done this with clients in different states around the country. You can make the argument that the law is not enforceable because the legal precedent from other jurisdictions says this is unconstitutional, an unconstitutional requirement. And I have helped clients get a religious exemption who were not members of an organized religion with tenets opposed to vaccines, but they lived in a state where the law essentially said you had to be. And I think what is really going on in those situations is that once an attorney gets involved, they're concerned that if they dig in their heels, that law is going to be challenged and it's going to be stricken as unconstitutional. And they would probably rather let the occasional zealous person slip through the cracks and have the exemption than they would risk having the exemption law being rewritten in a broader way that would, in effect, invite more people to exercise the exemption. So there's some politics that goes on in these situations. But long story short here, do we need to attend church or join a church? Will that help you get a religious exemption? The general answer to that is no. In fact, it can work against you, because if that fact comes out later, then that would be grounds for rejecting you as being insincere. If you join a church to get the exemption, maybe it's a church, it's religious, but it's going to be seen as insincere. As a client of mine said last fall, that would be cheating, wouldn't it? You know, well, yeah, sort of, so to speak. You know, the federal court that ruled in a case about that didn't call it cheating, but you could think of it in those terms. So that's going to be considered insincere. There's another question. I'm going to take another short question here, and then we'll have to go to break. We'll bring in Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Bruck at that point, and we'll talk about some really important vaccine news. But somebody asked me once, they say they understand that parents are allowed to change to religious exemptions after having already given their children some vaccinations. I'm going to slightly rephrase that to make it a more general question. Can you get an exemption, a religious exemption, if you've had vaccines in the past? Or can you get an exemption for your child if you've given your child vaccines in the past? And a lot of people misunderstand this. In fact, this question just came up for me yesterday with a parent here in North Carolina, where they were told by a school that the law says if you've had vaccines in the past, you can't use an exemption now. And with all due respect to the person who said that, they don't know what they're talking about. There is no law that I've ever seen anywhere that says if you've had past vaccines, you can't have a religious exemption now. To the contrary, there is federal legal precedent coming from a federal court, that says, in effect, it doesn't matter if you've had past vaccines, if right now, today, you have those two required things, a belief or beliefs that are religious in nature, as the law defines that, and sincerely held. And if you meet those two criteria, you have beliefs that are protected by the federal constitution. And so I always recommend that if you're in a state or other situation like employment or military or immigration where you have to state your religious beliefs, I strongly recommend people consider doing a consultation with a knowledgeable attorney, because there are legal pitfalls there to avoid that, in my experience, most people who write a statement of beliefs on their own without input about how the law works, they fall into one or more of these legal pitfalls. So if you have to state your beliefs, that's something to definitely consider. But does it matter if you've had past vaccines? Technically, no, because what it takes to qualify is a present, sincerely held religious belief. But here's the practical reality. If you've had vaccines in the past and you have today a sincerely held religious objection to vaccines, then one of two things happened with that past vaccine. Either you got that vaccine over and against your religious beliefs because you were pressured into it or didn't know you had a legal right, or your beliefs have changed. But either one of those are potential legitimate reasons why you could have had a vaccine in the past or given a child a vaccine in the past, and today you are exercising religious exemption. And if you have the required sincerely held religious belief today, then you qualify. Now, if you've had a recent vaccine, that may raise reasonable questions on somebody's part about whether or not you're sincere today. Are you just saying this because you changed your mind? Or do you really have the belief? So there are times when maybe you have to explain yourself, but the point is that it's definitely not an automatic loss of or prohibition against the exemption just on the basis that you've had a vaccine in the past. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. We air live every Thursday starting at 1 p.m. Eastern. It's 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain Time, and 10 a.m. Pacific Time. And this is a two-hour broadcast. We go for the first half hour talking about vaccine exemption and waiver rights and legal issues. We talk about vaccine news in the second and third half hours. And then the very last half hour, Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brooks talks to us about homeopathy. And we assume folks who listen to this show have a strong interest in the alternatives and options to traditional allopathic care. And homeopathy is one of the great opportunities, options and alternatives. And you can listen at the last half hour of our broadcast to Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brooke talk to you about homeopathy and its benefits and applications. And the wonderful thing about homeopathy, one of many wonderful things, is that homeopathy is something that everybody can learn a little bit about and use for common ailments at home. And you can work with a homeopath for more serious or chronic issues, but homeopathy is effective on a long, long list of different kinds of acute and chronic ailments, and definitely something worth educating ourselves about. I keep a homeopathy kit at home and use it from time to time, and have been helped by homeopaths for myself and my children in other issues as well. It's just a wonderfully effective and gentle means of healthcare. We're going to go to break here. We'll be gone for, I don't know, somewhere on the order of 4 minutes or so. Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. We will be right back shortly, folks, so please stay with us.
MMA fighter, NASCAR driver, and oath keeper, Jeffrey Earnhardt has given us the chance of a lifetime. On June 1st, 2013, at Dover Speedway, he could drive an Oath Keepers NASCAR, putting Defend the Constitution flying around the track in front of 40,000 live fans and 1.5 million fans in the TV audience. This is the biggest chance in a lifetime to educate a generation about the Constitution that has probably not seen it promoted in any other medium. It's up to us. They only need to raise $3,000 by May 1st, 2013 at midnight Eastern Time to make this happen. Go to oathkeepers.org, that's oathkeepers.org now, and help us defend the Constitution.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from libertystickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's libertystickers.com. But wait,
There's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to libertystickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. libertystickers.com. The world's most dangerous stickers.
Get ready for the epic movie documentary adventure ride of your life. Shade, the motion picture. A view into the globalist domain. Annabella Semperma's film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
We have never let them know that their world government has been identified, and they thought they just cloned the world economy to bring in a worldwide police state, but instead, it's going to bring them down.
You have to stand up. Speak up. Speak out.
See the motion picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at shadethemotionpicture.com.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance, available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you will ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
We are back. This is Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips and Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brock. Let me see if Debbie is with us. Debbie?
I am here. Yeah. I'm here.
Debbie,
today
are you with us?
Can you hear me? I am here.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and start talking about some vaccine news. And Debbie, if you're there.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Strangely enough. Oh, we're getting an echo. Are you getting it?
I do not hear an echo on my end. So if we're lucky, you're hearing that there in your neck of the woods, and it's not coming over the air. But, you know, Debbie, you're wonderful enough that if we can hear you twice, I think, you know, it would be worth it anyway. So.
Well, it's echoing in my ear. It's not really. What happened is the host is not broadcasting. Let me try it again.
Muted.
Okay, testing 1, 2, 3. Can you hear me? Probably can't. Okay.
Unmuted.
Okay, I'll have to do it this way, unfortunately.
Okay, well, however it works for you is...
I want to acknowledge all of the people in the chat who are having an active discussion about all the kinds of things in our world that are contaminated and with criminal activity approved, different things like vaccines, and I'm getting a double, it's like double vision. Okay. Stevia and all the other things, aspartame. We're not going to get into it, but because today is a national day of prayer, what I'd like to do is think of the positive and look forward. Okay, so I don't know if I'm going to be able to do the entire shoe like this. Oh my gosh.
Well, it sounds It sounds fine on my end, Debbie. So I think you're really, I think you're fine for the purpose of the show. Whatever you're hearing on your end, sorry about whatever technical difficulties are there. But well, you know, this is
muted.
The piece I wanted to start off with today in the news is a I'll just express, I want to say optimistic piece of news cautiously. You have to be real careful with anything that looks positive in the healthcare world, or especially the vaccine arena, because anything that looks like a glimmer of light often gets snuffed out really quick, lest it
Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host will be notified that there is a caller in queue. Otherwise, please hold and you will be able to listen to the show.
Ideally, if we could get this done in a true and objective way, that would undoubtedly blow open the whole problem. The whole vaccine injury connection, the whole scam about the deliberate harming and killing of children for profit by the pharmaceutical industry, the corrupt people in federal agencies that support and promote this agenda. I don't know any nice words for this, and it's so clear that this is what's going on. I don't throw these kind of words around lightly, but when you can only see so much evidence before you get angry and feel like you just have to call it like it is, call it like you see it. And I keep repeating over and over again the story about how the Coalition for Mercury-Free Drugs, a nonprofit organization, got information from the CDC through the Freedom of Information Act, federal law that requires government agencies to provide information that's not classified on request. And the CDC has a history of refusing to provide information that they're legally required to provide and forcing people to either give up or take them to court to get it. So I don't know how long this organization goes by sort of a nickname, CoMed, short for the Coalition for Mercury-Free Drugs. I don't know how long CoMed worked at this, but they got information from back in maybe 2002 or so, early part of the decade, and they got the information in 2011. And there's another recent article, again, talking about this issue. And the articles we talk about, the news stories we talk about, are often, most often, ones that are linked at the news page of the Pandemic Response Project. So that website is, all three of these words spelled out in full, pandemicresponseproject.com, pandemicresponseproject.com, and there's a news link up at the top right. That's updated daily or every other day, most of the time with current events, links to articles that are mostly about vaccines or closely related issues. So there was another article just talking about this same thing that I keep talking about over and over again with the Coalition for Mercury-Free Drugs. A good article gives a good quick summary of what's going on there. So we know, bottom line, that the CDC knows and has known probably from long before the early part of the last decade, but nonetheless, we have objective evidence proving that they know that vaccines cause autism from at least 10 years ago now, and yet they keep claiming over and over again vaccines don't cause autism. I'm not suggesting that everybody who works for the CDC is dishonest. In fact, I think probably the vast majority of people in the healthcare industry and the federal agencies and state agencies are probably honest, hardworking people. A lot of them are misinformed, but that's because there are people in key decision-making positions in government and in industry who control or profoundly influence the thinking of most people and the policy and law for all of us. So there are CDC officials, absolutely, who are crystal clear on the fact that vaccines cause autism and many other neurological and immunological conditions, and they suppress that information actively and deliberately for as long as they can to keep those high pharmaceutical profits coming. It's all going to come crashing down. And a bill that has just been introduced that, if passed, would require a study of autism rates in vaccinated versus unvaccinated has the potential. I mean, that can always be handled in a corrupt way, like so many other things get handled in Washington. But if it bill gets passed and if the study is done properly, this could blow open the whole thing. And I think it's really fascinating because we heard, I think recently it was in the National Institutes of Health saying that, well, we don't need to do a study about comparing vaccinated and unvaccinated kids because the vaccine program is safe. That is so obviously disingenuous. That's a polite word. I can't say what I'm really thinking. That's so obviously disingenuous. You know, if you've got nothing to hide, do the study, put the issue to rest, and let's get on with our lives. But they're not going to do that willingly. They're going to have to be forced to do
Hello,
it.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can.
Did I fix my sound? Oh, my goodness. Awesome. Okay. I'm just going to get in here on that particular issue of it's not scientific if they don't want to take an objective look at a vaccine group and an unvaccinated group. And we have some data now coming in from Heidi Stevenson of Gaia Health, GAIA-health.com. She has recently written a new article, up to 100% of vaccinated sheep contract chronic neurologic syndrome. This is a study about the disease called blue tongue in sheep. And they have compared a vaccinated to an unvaccinated group of sheep with devastating results. And so you can see the wasting away of these animals. There's a specific scientific name for it. It's ASIA. And let me see if I can tell you what that is. Autoimmune inflammatory syndrome induced by adjuvants. And one of the key components in the adjuvants, everybody thinks it's thimerosal, but it is the aluminum. Just like don't cook in aluminum pans, don't use aluminum foil, don't boil your tea, your hot water in an aluminum pot because it will seep in the microscopic level of those minerals and go straight to your brain and cause things like Alzheimer's. It's going to disrupt your neurons in there. And so she has a new article. Did you get to see it, Alan? Hey, oops, I think we lost your sound.
Unmuted.
Hello, Alan. Are you there? Oops. Alan.
There we go. Yeah. New, Debbie. I haven't heard this, so I appreciate you bringing it to my attention.
Okay. Well, it is a brand new article, and it's quite detailed. And her forte, what Heidi does is she takes scientific with extremely a lot of scientific verbiage and language, and she narrows it down and gives it to you in digestible parts and with very succinct sections explaining step by step about a disease, about the data. She uses graphs, she uses images, she shows you exactly what happens in the study so that anybody can look at it and get some kind of an understanding. And she compares the number of vaccine inoculations given to these experimental animals at a specific time and date, days. And one of the interesting things about this study is, you know how when we think about giving a vaccine, you want to look at the response or reaction of the child after that day, a week, 2 weeks, maybe a month? But this had looked at it, and at day 177, there was a big change. So it seems as if we need to keep an eye on a longer period of after effect.
And
you
she,
know,
yeah, go ahead.
That's a real interesting point that you make there, Debbie. I used to live across the street from a couple who were both nurses at Duke University. And the husband father of the family was telling me about research that he had participated in with a pharmaceutical company in conjunction with Duke and at Duke University. And he said that the pharmaceutical rep didn't like the data that came out of the study, so he changed the data. And I asked this gentleman, this nurse, if he felt like that was unusual or an isolated instance, and he just sort of lowered his head a little bit and shook it back and forth. No, this is, you know, status quo. This is how the industry works. it's really a concern sometimes how this gets handled. But I wanted to jump in with one other quick comment too here, if I may. The other show I do on Monday nights with Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, we had a guest recently, a Dr. Patricia Jordan, who is a North Carolina veterinarian and very, very active in both animal and human vaccine issues. And she, too, had been saying that there was other research. I think she was talking about research looking at dogs, but where they had compared vaccinated and unvaccinated in animals. So there is some precedent, if you want to call it that, in a sort of a general sense, for the idea that we should be looking at that in humans, coming from the animal research world. And so I hadn't heard about the one with sheep. I think this is awesome. Appreciate you bringing it to all of our attention. I'm sure it'll come across my screen in the next day or two, and I'll add a link to
the article. Yeah, I'll send you that article. So I just wanted to let you know that it was that the chart is about the number of days, the number of inoculations, the amount of aluminum that was detected, and the amount of thimerosal in milligrams. And, you know, one of the major problems that we have for these kids who are getting up to 56 vaccines by the age of 6 is the change in their intestine, in their digestive system, in their guts. And now they're coming up, and this is something that you wanted to talk about, they're coming up with a brand new vaccine to address the issue of the dysfunction of the gut flora. And it seems to me, you know, it's like when we give a medicine and there are side effects, do you just give more medicine on top of that? Or do you take a step back, withdraw the medicine and say, this isn't working properly, and go at it at another angle? Or do you just keep piling on more vaccines? What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, I'm gonna take a step back. I think I actually failed to get to the one of the points I meant to get to a couple minutes ago, and that is that the other thing that I was learning at about the same time that I was talking to these nurses that I mentioned was that it's routine practice in the industry to look for adverse effects from a drug for a very limited period of time, and if they, for example, find that adverse effects start showing up 3 weeks after the drug is administered, then they will commission a study for 2 weeks and find no adverse effects, and then the drug is safe and marketable. And the idea that vaccines, we know that vaccines can have immediate effects. Somebody can immediately after mm-hmm. being vaccinated go into anaphylactic shock and die right there. And
a fever or have swelling.
Well,
all
kinds of things,
like,
but but you can have, the point is there can be serious problems, including death and disability, that show up right away. There can also be serious problems that show up literally decades later, where we saw, for example, with the early polio vaccines that were contaminated with the simian virus 40, SV40, that is now decades later being cultured in various cancers. And so we know it's related. In fact, there have been people who stepped forward who were involved in the original polio vaccine development who said, yes, they knew that the vaccine caused cancer in laboratory animals, but they administered the vaccine anyway. They put it out on the market anyway. Probably a financial decision. You know, it takes millions of dollars to get a drug developed and researched and out on the market, and you don't want to get, you know, most of the way through that process heavily invested into it financially and then say, oops, never mind, and throw it out the window. But, of course, there's no amount of money that is a valid rationale for causing unnecessary harm to people. And the polio vaccine, I don't want to get too sidetracked here, the polio vaccine actually reversed a pre-existing decline, and that fact was covered up by manipulating the statistics and the definitions and so forth. But in any case, this is the world we live in and the way it works sometimes. So, but my point, I guess, is that my sources from years ago tell me that it used to be, and I wouldn't be surprised if it still was, common practice to set up research studies so that they don't go far enough in time to find adverse events, and that they will even deliberately avoid going far enough to find them if they don't show up immediately. And so that there's a study looking 170-something days out from the administration of a vaccine in animals is just really heartening to me, that at least somebody somewhere is taking a serious look at the idea that vaccines have long-term adverse effects.
Yeah, so the data then is skewed. We're not getting a full picture when we don't take in the time factor. That is true. And I'm going to be giving you, in particular, this article about blue tongue vaccine in lambs and what happens to them over their lifetime. And she makes a pretty interesting conclusion, which is better, the disease or the vaccine. And in the disease, they don't all die, but with the vaccine, they do. So it's
pretty cut and dried.
So take your pick. If it's okay, the last paragraph in her article, it's certainly true that the fact aluminum in vaccines causes debilitating and deadly ASIA, that's the immune disease, in sheep, does not necessarily translate to humans. However, the evidence that aluminum adjuvants do cause these ASIA, I feel like saying Asia, like yep. syndromes in humans, coupled with how devastating this disease is in sheep, not to mention how common, should trigger a regulatory response to eliminate aluminum from vaccines. Indeed, it's truly impossible to find any reason other than selling out to explain why it's still in them. And she has done a tremendous amount of research about specifically the devastating effects of using aluminum and how it is proliferating around in our environment these days. So that is that article. And did you want to talk a little bit further about the vaccine to control autism symptoms?
Well, first of all, I just want to mention that there is peer-reviewed published medical literature implicating the aluminum in vaccines as a connection to autism, a study published in late 2011. I don't have the site right in front of me, but it's mentioned in some of the articles that I've written. It did not conclude that the aluminum causes autism, but it said that basically there was evidence showing that loose aluminum may be a causal relationship with autism, and so we need to look at that. I've seen other information in the past that says, you know, mercury is bad and aluminum is bad, but the combination together actually is many, many times more problematic than either one of those elements alone. And so, you know, none of these ingredients in vaccines sit there in isolation from the other ingredients. And there, as far as I know, is very little research looking at how all these different things can affect the body short-term and long-term in isolation, let alone in combination. So could be some very serious problems on that level. But yes, and I just got a chuckle at this. A article, the title is, "You Knew It Was Coming, First Vaccine Announced for Autism." You know, we actually had something similar to this So like you were saying, you know, when a medication has adverse effects, do you just give another medication to treat those effects? And you end up with this unending cycle of new adverse effects and new drugs to treat the last medication's adverse effects. Or do you step back at the beginning of all of that and say, well, wait a minute, if there are serious adverse effects from the medication, maybe we need to look and see if there's a different approach. But, you know, Debbie, you know, you and I just have to learn to think economically. You know, it's like, it's a no-brainer. Of course, if there are adverse effects, you prescribe another medication, because then you get twice as much money out of that patient. So, you know, we just haven't learned. We've got to get with the program here.
It's the medical mentality of always going down the wrong path. You know, if I have a tool, if I have a scissor, the only thing I can do is cut. If I have gene jerking, the only thing I can do is genetic engineering. If I, you know, they only do what they have. If I'm a surgeon, I'm going to say, let's cut it out. And I think that's the way it is with vaccines. This is a road that people have been traveling down for so long that this is their answer to a problem without keeping an open mind about the other ways that you could improve the health of a total population by providing them the necessities, Maslow's basics, you know, the needs that will keep a person healthy. Because our health is based on more than the material world. It's based on the spiritual world. It's based on our emotions. There's somebody in the chat who's like really, really upset, really angry and cursing and name calling and things like that. I hate to tell you that online, but, you know, people, it's not going to do that person any good to get their heart all in a state of fire and muscles tense and all these things that happen to our body, to our hormones, to our entire chemical system of our self and our emotional self. It's not going to bring us to a better place. And
well,
I'm
going to interject here because there's certainly merit to your comment, but I'm going to respectfully disagree in part. First of all, anger is a very healthy potentially unhealthy too, and that's your point, and it's a valid one. But potentially healthy, but certainly reasonable response to learning that you've been deceived, manipulated, unnecessarily hurt or harmed. And so I certainly understand those feelings because I have them and have had them in the 19 years, throughout the 19 years that I've been looking at and exploring and investigating the vaccine issue. But if that anger is channeled in a constructive way, if all we do, we the alternative vaccine community, if all we do is share our anger and frustration, maybe there is a little group therapy benefit there at some level, but really it's not going to fix anything or help anything, and we're going to get, and a lot of people do get stuck in kind of a cycle of anger that if you get stuck in that anger vortex, then yes, that's going to eat away at you, at your health and at your energy and your mental clarity and all kinds of potential negative effects. But if it fuels you to take constructive action, then maybe the anger has a very positive aspect. So I hope for any of us who are very reasonably feeling anger as we uncover and discover how the world we live in really works, that we will do our best to channel that anger into constructive directions. You know, Debbie, we're already up on break time again. You want to? I don't want to cut you off. Though, is there anything else you want to say before we go to break?
If you don't mind, I will respond to what you just said.
Sure.
I think you said it very succinctly, but when you say the vortex of anger means like you think about a vortex is something that's spinning and sucking you in, you have no control. You're going to slip into that just like you're going to slip into a tornado, which is like a whirlwind of vortex or a water spout. You have no control. And when that happens, anger is not going to be your protector or something good for you. It's only going to be good when it is, like you say, something that motivates you to action, to take a step to improve the situation in a disciplined way, not in an out-of-control way. And we're going to talk about a lot of this when I get to my section on stress reduction. So go ahead and do our little the ads that keep this show alive and support the advertisers who are going to be on, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Yes, you're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brook, and I see that our intermittent guest and supporter, Rich Roberts, manager of the Pandemic Response Project, is on the line. Rich, stay with us. We'll bring you on right after break, and we will all three talk about some more vaccine news items in the next half hour. Don't go away, folks.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
We are so pleased to announce ESP Botanicals is now sponsoring Freedomizer Radio. They have a bath and body line of products made for keeping your skin beautiful and healthy, but it's also for psoriasis, eczema, rosacea, and dermatitis treatment. They are meticulously prepared skincare products made from the best botanicals available. Committed to buying only from the growers when they can and using the highest quality cold-pressed oils, botanical organic additives, the best steam-expressed essential oils, and the least processed carrier oils that are available in today's marketplace. Pamper yourself or someone special in your life. Give the gift of beautiful, glowing skin. ESP Botanicals.com. Thank you so much for supporting us at Freedomizer Radio.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now, as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic, great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com, and check it out and order it, Silver Leaf Tea. Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com. Hey guys, Proof here. Guess what? I just got a cell phone. Hey, for everyone that knows me, I'm not a fan of cell phones, but I just signed up with a company called SolarBay. And SolarBay is offering a plan right now with unlimited phone, text, and web for only $49 a month. Plus, if you refer a friend or two, you get a discounted rate for everyone you refer. for as long as they have Solovay, not just for the first month, but the whole time that person has Solovay. You sign up enough people, and Solovay pays you every month. What other cell phone company is going to pay you for service? Anyway, go to Solovay.com/freedomizer. That's Solovay, Solavei.com/freedomizer. Learn all about it. Plus, and another kicker, if you sign up three people under you, you'll get another month for free as well. Plus, they're going to pay you cash. Anyway, Solovay.com/freedomizer.
Well, we are back. Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, and mowers outside my window. So if you hear some rumbling in the background here, that's what it is, but it will only last for a couple of minutes. And Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Bruck, and Rich Roberts is with us as well. Rich?
Well, good afternoon, Alan. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being with us. We always appreciate when you can be here. Rich, I'll just throw the ball to you, if that's okay. Is there
sure?
I don't know when if you got in the first part of the show or not. We talked a lot about some autism-related issues. A bill just introduced into Congress that, if passed, would require a vaccinated versus unvaccinated comparison of autism rates. And there's, of course, now a new vaccine for autism. You know, the vaccines can cause autism, and I guess they can prevent it and cure it too. So now there's a vaccine for autism. What has caught your attention, Rich?
Well, it's interesting because those two issues you were highlighting there are two of the issues that definitely caught my attention. I have an article here about the congressman from Florida who introduced the bill requiring a study of autism in vaccinated versus unvaccinated. And that is such a welcome study. If we would get that, that would be such a move forward, I think, because it would just so definitely show, you know, the connection that we want to make. And so
can I qualify that vaccine for the autism symptoms? It is not on the shelf, and it may take 10 years of research for this carbohydrate-based vaccine against the gut bacteria Clostridium botulinum. So basically, it's not in the market. It's just it's in the media news that it's, you know, in development. I hope that clarifies it.
Yeah, thank you for that clarification, Debbie. That gives me a little sigh of relief to realize it's years away as opposed to something that's just about to come out. But there are, according to a recent article, 250 vaccines that are either awaiting approval with the FDA already or are in clinical trials. You know, there are not 250 infectious childhood diseases, of course, and so at least identified ones of any concern. So there are vaccines for all kinds of other things, vaccines for obesity or cocaine addiction or whatever. And so I can't say I'm surprised that somebody says, oh, let's, you know, do a vaccine for autism. But it really bothers me that they're going to not only are they going to suppress the autism vaccine connection in the first place, but they're going to, you know, after they've denied that vaccines have anything to do with autism, we'll go a step further and we'll come up with a vaccine that'll actually prevent autism. And wouldn't it be interesting if it were hypothetically true that you could get a vaccine that would keep you from being hurt by other vaccines so that you could then get other vaccines? But I'm a little skeptical, if you'll forgive me.
You know, it always ends up with this money issue. Did you also talk in any previous show about the preparation of Congress to have a $100 million bipartisan flu tax? That means that the legislation would exact a 75 cent per dose tax on any vaccine against seasonal flu, and it projects 135 million doses, and you do the math, of flu vaccine to be used in a year. And the government's take on the flu vaccine alone is 100 million per year.
Well, somebody's got to fund all those secret operations that are off the books. Let's not go there. But
I think a good number of the portion of the income is supposed to go to the VAERS, the Vaccine Help me out there.
Yeah, adverse event reporting system.
Adverse event reporting system, right. So because they're having so many adverse effects, they need a fund to support payments.
Well, my understanding is that the fund connected with the injury compensation program, that they have more funds there than they're paying out, so there's actually a surplus. Of course, that's only because they're going out of their way to keep any a majority of the true injuries and deaths caused by vaccines from ever getting into the compensation system or getting compensated if they do get in. I mean, FDA and CDC officials both, as well as the folks from the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, have all said 90 to 99% of vaccine adverse events never even get reported. So if anything approaching the reality of what goes on in the real world in terms of vaccine injury and death were actually getting reported and seeking compensation, they'd deplete that fund really quickly. But I'm not sure what the money connected with the adverse event reporting system would be for. That's just a passive reporting system for people to report suspected vaccine injury and death, and or other kinds of. It doesn't have to be serious injuries. You can report any kind of reaction, but you, of course.
Maybe we can call it a government fundraiser.
Yeah, I used to love the bumper stickers that would say something about, you know, let's have a bake sale for the military and take that government money and put it somewhere else. You know, let's have the money that goes to fund war, let's give that to education, and let's let the military have a bake sale to raise money instead of the schools doing that. You know, so some real sanity to the underlying concept. Well, here's another one, guys. I gotta. This one is another one that just makes you sure to shake your head. Government-funded phone app tracks vaccine refusers. So there's now somebody's developed an app for the smartphones that will supposedly make it easier for, I guess it's for doctors, to report vaccine refusals, so that they can sort of start tracking these, and they'll have what they call a heat map, where are the higher percentages, I guess, or numbers of people refusing vaccines, so they can target us individually and collectively, I would presume. But sure, why not? There's an app
they,
for
they
everything
like,
else.
They like demographics. It's a big thing. Right? What do you say, Rich?
Well, this concerns me because it seems to me that the logical conclusion of gathering this sort of data is then to use it, you know, to come after the people who aren't complying. And so I would expect, you know, emails, phone calls, and possibly even people coming to the door. And I wonder, Alan, you know, in those sort of situations where if you really did have a team of people coming to your door, would you just kind of calmly say that you have a religious exemption to that and turn them away, or how would that even work, you know?
Well, it's a really good question, but first of all, let me clarify that what you're proposing here is not something coming from paranoia, and it's not purely hypothetical. There is language in Obamacare to provide grants, federal grant money to states to do all kinds of things in promoting and supporting vaccination, but including people going door to door. I tell you, you've got to be really, really aggressive as a pharmaceutical industry to promote and support that kind of thing. And I'm making the a speculation here, but it's certainly not out of left field. I'm assuming, I think reasonably, if not with clear documentation supporting it, that this is the sort of thing that's the result of aggressive pharmaceutical lobbying. But in any event, there's language in Obamacare to spend federal dollars helping states go send people door to door. So this could genuinely happen. And it's a really interesting situation. You know, the fact that there's government money paying people to go door to door doesn't necessarily mean you have to answer the door or have to cooperate with them. I have not yet heard of laws. I say yet because, you know, there's no end to the vaccine agenda aggression. It's going to continue rolling out and continue expanding and growing if we don't take steps to stop it. And this is something that's not happening only in the vaccine arena. We're losing rights in other arenas as well. So the vaccine is a huge and important issue, but it's, in one sense, it's only a symptom of a much larger and, you know, equally troubling, if not more troubling, arena and agenda here. But but it's an interesting question. You know, during the pandemic, I got a lot of phone calls from people saying, hey, if they mandate this vaccine, how do I avoid it? And what I found myself saying in that situation when I looked into laws and realized that there were laws all over the country that can mandate emergency vaccines without exemptions, and I'm going to give about the same answer or a similar answer, which is the reason I bring this up, Rich. At that time, I was saying the way you avoid that in the future is you do anything and everything you can now to avoid ever being in that situation in the first place. Well, it may be too late to do that now if there's already federal grant money, and we may see people coming door to door. I don't think we have a legal obligation to answer the door or to cooperate with them. You know, if you answer the door and somebody says, we'd like to, you know, are there unvaccinated people here? I think you can say, well, that's, you know, as politely as you can, I'm sorry, but that's none of your business. You know, or if they say, our records show your children are unvaccinated, we'd like to encourage you to get a vaccine, you know, you can politely say, I'd like you to encourage you to leave my property and go bother someone else, you know. I tell you, Rich, I don't really recommend being a smartass or adversarial, but I tell you, if somebody shows up at my door, it's going to take a lot of restraint on my part, and God help me take a couple of deep breaths before I respond to that, because if I don't relax, I may say something that will anger somebody. But I, you know, I don't see a legal obligation to cooperate. But what I do see is a point that you're having brought this up and brought it to our attention that we all need to realize is a potential reality. And one of the things we need to do that that I keep saying over and over again and will continue to do is to say we need to become active in this arena, legislatively active, but active in our own education and ongoing education about the issues, the medical and political issues, and what's going on in the law, changes in the law, and taking steps to try to roll all of this back. Some of the bills pending in state legislatures around the country will expand or increase vaccine tracking. There are at least two states that have bills that want to add adults to vaccine registries. How would you like it, Rich, if someone comes to your door and says, we see that you haven't gotten, you know, a flu shot, and we want you to go out and get a flu shot? Or here, we have a flu shot, we'd be glad to vaccinate you right here. Or what if there is another declared emergency, whether one ever really exists or not, and they go door-to-door to vaccinate people? You know, there's a pandemic right now, and the emergency vaccine has been mandated here, and
you
we're
know
here
what,
to give
Alan?
You your vaccine. Yeah.
Hey, Alan, have you ever celebrated Halloween where the kids are coming, but your house is dark, there's nobody home? Yeah, that's what you have to do when they're knocking on the doors.
Well, you know,
you
I do that sometimes with
home.
I do that sometimes after hours with my telephone. I look at the caller ID, and if I don't recognize the number, I'll let the answer machine get it. I probably shouldn't say it on the air, but you know, I do that after hours. But and not always. If I'm able to pick up, I will try to do that anyway. But you know, you may not know. Should you never answer the door if it's somebody you don't know? I mean, how paranoid do we need to become? Now, I'm not suggesting that paranoia is not necessary. You know, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. You know, as one of my siblings once said, a little paranoia maybe is a healthy response to some of these situations. But do we really want them controlling us at the level of don't ever answer your door, you know, if you look through
right.
the peephole and it's not somebody you know? And
so we become the prisoners,
right?
In this instance.
And so if you look out and it looks like somebody you don't want to take a chance with, then don't answer your door. But if you answer the door and it turns out to be someone who's there about vaccines, what do you do? And I don't think there's a real clear, straight, simple answer. But the situation, the only situation where I could see that there might be a clear legal issue in terms of you're answering the door, somebody's there with a vaccine, and you might technically be legally required to get it, is if there is a declared emergency and emergency vaccines ordered. You know, if you know that that's the state of affairs, that's the time when I wouldn't answer the door, you know, but
right.
at all, you know. As long
what
as that
would Greg Glaze, you
but.
Know, you know, you have certain people who you quote. Here's my answer. What would Greg Glaser say? No, what would Greg Glaser do?
Well,
he would run for the hills.
There's a valid question. There's sort of two different layers to the answer. The first layer is, what are the legal technicalities? And it is possible to be ordered to get a vaccine, an emergency vaccine, when you do not have a legal exemption right. And so if there's anything you can do to avoid being in that situation, and that includes being legislatively active to pass laws that give you exemption rights during emergencies, and I only know of one state that has that. I think it's Minnesota. So the rest of us, most if not all the rest of us, could be in a difficult situation. So
I have a question. I'm cutting you off a lot today.
Well, I'm talking, so that's probably a good thing.
What if I posted on my – this is just hypothetical, just, you know, creative thinking. What if you take a big sign and you post it on your front and your side door, whatever, and you say, quarantine, we have a contagious disease in here. Would that mean that the police can't come in? Would that mean, in other words?
Well, it's the health department. I mean, you're getting into an area that I was just about to talk about, if you're out of technical legal options, are there any sort of fallback positions or practical things you could do? Because it's the health department that has the authority to declare or order a quarantine or isolation. You know, they're the health authorities with the supposedly the knowledge and in any event the authority to make those kind of declarations. So, I mean, you could, you know, there are things you can try to see if they work, whether or not they are clear legal options. And so if somebody comes to my door and says, you've got to get a vaccine, I'm going to say it's against my – because it is. I'm not just making this up. It's against my religious beliefs. And, you know, maybe the response they have is, well, I'm sorry, this is an emergency vaccine. There's no religious exemption that applies here. And I'm going to say, well, I have a federal constitutional right to the free exercise of religion. I'm an attorney. I've studied this for years. I know what my rights are, and I'm not getting the vaccine. Now, technically in that situation, they're probably right, not me, in terms of a pure legal analysis. But, you know, that doesn't mean that there aren't things you can say or try to see if they work. And sometimes
I'm calling my lawyer, and that's you.
Yeah. But here's the deal. You know, there can be situations where you're required to get a vaccine and you don't have a legal right not to. Do they have the legal right to hold you down and physically force the vaccine on you? And that's a separate question, and I don't think they do. And
you don't think they do?
I think what they can do is, if you refuse to get a mandated vaccine, is they can decide that you have to be quarantined. Now, most laws will say something like least restrictive manner or whatever, which would at least theoretically make your home and doing home quarantine an option. You say, you know, it's against my religious beliefs. I'm not going to get this vaccine. I'd be glad to stay home if you want to quarantine me, but I'm not, you know, coming out to your government facility and I'm not getting a vaccine. But at the end of the day, if they have legal authority to decide something different than what I just proposed someone might offer, you know, then they may see need or reason to force their will upon you, and I don't know what you do. And so this is where I keep coming back to the do everything you can now to avoid ever being in that situation. We need to be legislatively active now to insist on laws being passed in every state that allows people to say no to vaccines, whether or not it's an emergency vaccine, and to quarantine in their homes if the quarantine is required, if that's the place that somebody wants to do their quarantine, or any other lawful location, I guess, you know. So this is what gave birth to the Pandemic Response Project that Rich and I have been working on for 2-3 years now. Of course, the legislative world is a slow process, but we are here working on this in North Carolina and available to assist people in other states working on that same agenda in any other state. We're rolling in. Boy, I've done this again. I've talked my way up close to another break here in the next couple of minutes. I want to give Rich a chance again to get in here because, Debbie, after the break, we're going to switch to you talking about homeopathy for the last half hour. But let's give either one of you or both of you a chance to chime in here with anything, and then we'll go to another break.
Well, Alan, I was just thinking, you know, this is a scary observation, but if it really came down to, you know, and some sort of team coming to one's door and demanding in an emergency that you get a vaccine or else be hauled off to some sort of, you know, government facility, that would probably be like the kiss of death to literally kind of, you know, leave your home in the custody of those people and go to some sort of detention facility. So, you know, it might be crazy, but there could be a time where it might be safer to just sort of get a shot than literally put oneself on a paddy wagon. Because we've talked about this before, what an eerie thing, you know, if you literally had hundreds or thousands of people kind of quarantined in a government facility and they refused to, say, take a flu shot. Well, what a great time for, you know, the dark forces to try to, you know, launch some sort of biological attack and sort of blame it on the kind of people who don't comply with the vaccination, you know, instead of, but, you know, I know that's a very eerie kind of thought, but it does seem
you're
like,
saying,
you know,
you're saying you would submit to the flu vaccine. That's what you're saying.
Before going to a government facility.
I'm saying if you were really faced with that kind of possibility or choice of get this shot or literally get, you know, come with us, we're taking you to a government quarantine, that would be really scary. That would literally, like, in my mind, be like being rounded up for the Holocaust or something.
That's what we're moving toward. I mean, it sounds like it.
And so, you know, Lord forbid that ever happen. And so it does kind of definitely motivate, you know, me to work, to build awareness and to work legislatively to get things done. And we do still have, you know, our legislation pending here in North Carolina, Alan, and it kind of makes me want to talk with you more, you know, after the show about, gee, what can we do to revisit that and try to kind of, you know, initiate, you know, some sort of progress on that.
Yep, we'll do that.
So legislation is the prime thing to do as preemptive now.
Yes, right. Exactly. But I do want to say, Rich, you know, I certainly sympathize with your idea there, your concern, but I think if there is a negative or dark agenda underneath this, they're going to set it up so they get you one way or the other. In other words, they're either going to get you with the shot. You know, what if they have such a driving need to give literally everyone a shot no matter what? What is it in the shot that you're going to get that's not going to happen to you in the facility some other way anyway? You know, I mean, I'm not sure. It sounds like a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation to me.
Yeah.
And so I think the focus needs to be on not being home when they come, or avoiding, you know, having the right, a clear right in the law spelled out for you to say no thank you and stay home.
Well, and having kind of said what I said, also a very kind of strong part of my ethics would say that I would still be obligated to refuse the shot no matter what, because at that point, you know, that I feel like they've really infringed on me, then I'm at the point where I have to kind of take a stand on principle. And, you know, I just don't want to. So I don't know. I don't know what I would do, I guess, but it sure would be a bad situation to be in and a bad choice to make. So I think you're right. Just not being home might be the smartest play anybody could make.
I'm going to go for that.
Yay.
One.
Okay. Get out of town.
Yeah. Well, Rich, thanks so much for coming on with us today. You're listening to the Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S., and coming up after the break, founder of Homeopathy World Community, Debbie Brook, talking to us about homeopathy and benefits and applications there. So this is really important information coming from somebody who knows homeopathy well. So stick around, folks, right after the break. Debbie Brook with Homeopathy World Community.
Blessings. Are the storms of life casting their shadows? Is your heart being overcharged with the deceit and devastation of the coming New World Order? Are all the lies making the truth harder to recognize? Let me invite you to join us where the sun shines on the Sound Doctrine Ministries Sabbath Show and Tuesday Fellowship Programs at noon Pacific Standard Time and 2 p.m. Central Standard Time here on the Freedomizer Radio Network. We'll have guests, our new Christian Common Sense commentaries, our Christian updates, and great gospel music. Call in at 347-324-3704 to speak with our host or to just listen to the show. Or join us in our 24/7 chat room at freedomizerradio.com as we spiritually prepare for the return of our Lord. Blessings and peace to your home.
Hey everyone, this is Ron from Ron's Media Matrix on the Freedomizer Radio Network. Be sure to catch my show broadcast here every Tuesday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you're listening in another part of the world, that's 1800 to 2000 hours Greenwich Mean Time. We're here covering breaking world news, current geopolitical trends, keeping you up to date on the latest science and technology, along with interviewing a wide range of guests, versed in a variety of special topics, and that's not all. Freedomizer Radio broadcasts 15 hours a day, 7 days a week, with other talk show hosts that cover a wide variety of topics, including health, current events, emergency preparations, spiritual interests, and much, much more. So be sure to stay tuned in at www.freedomizerradio.com. That's www.freedomizerradio.com. And if you're away from your home computer, you can always listen to us on your cell phone by calling 347-324-3704. 347-324-3704. And thanks for listening.
This is Debbie.
And I'm Michael, along with CD, the Constitutional Defender Dog. Is mainstream media giving you the real stories, or are they just telling you what they want you to hear?
Join us for Securing Liberty on Freedomizer Radio, Thursday evenings at 11 p.m. Central.
We'll be joined by great guests, discuss interesting and important topics, current events, maybe even a little humor. Be prepared for anything.
It will be 90 minutes of information sure to help you on your quest for truth. So join Securing Liberty at 11 p.m. Central on Freedomizer Radio.
Join me, Valerie Ann, on the Truth Exposition Show at Freedomizer Radio in exposing the truth about FEMA camps, drone surveillance, martial law, the New World Order, our threatened freedoms and civil liberties, and for weekly news and current events. Mainstream media continues with its lies and deceit to fulfill the agenda of the New World Order. So please join me in exposing the truth, along with the lies and the deceptions that are being fed to the American people. The people of the United States have a voice, and your voice will be heard through Freedomizer Radio.
Lindsay Williams on Freedomizer Radio.
Truth Negative, I love the title that you use on your radio. I've thought about it ever since we talked on off of the air the other day, and I'd say that's an excellent title for a talk show host.
Hey, Freedomist, join me, Proof Negative, weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific, as we fight the New World Order together. Right here on Freedomizer Radio, your exclusive home of the Proof Negative Show.
Well, we're back, and Debbie, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Awesome.
Homeopathy World Community founder, Debbie Brook.
Here we are. We're back, and I want to say a tremendous amount of gratitude to my good friend, Alan Phillips, who is doing incredible work out there in the legal
arena for protecting our rights and writing papers and confronting the people who are our legislators and really thinking hard about ways that we can gain our rights back and not go down this rabbit hole any further, and for taking over and working the dashboard and so many things that he does here. I have a tremendous amount of admiration for his abilities, both in the legal, with the law, with his connections and his advocacy work, his volunteerism, and also his musicianship as an instrumentalist, a lyricist, and a composer. So listen to his music coming on and off of this show. As well, today is, as mentioned earlier, the National Day of Prayer, which means that we must get in touch with more than just our physical selves. We need to get in touch with spirit. So I have a couple of little things to say. One is about repentance. This comes from Rabbi Schneur Zalman of Liadi. He says, a common misconception is that repentance is simply an antidote to sin, and thus applies only to sinners and lowly people. In truth, repentance is the soul's return to and restoration of its original purity, and applies to every soul that has descended into the human state, unquote. And so you might meditate on that thought. What is this human state that we have sunk into, that we have so many temptations, and we need to create boundaries for ourselves, fences for ourselves, positive thoughts in our mind, saying verbally out loud positive affirmations, and looking for the good in each other. I think that is something that's going to help find the good in you when you find the good, that little spark of light in another person. The other thing is another quote. It is about small things. Great things are not what is demanded from our generation. The previous generations did all of that for us. We need only to do the small things, but in a more difficult time. For us, self-sacrifice could mean nothing more than a simple change of habit. So think about that one. That means that the small things that you do every single day, you have to imbue those daily routines, those daily chores, as if it's some sort of a ritual to imbue something good in it. Think of it as it was written, self-sacrifice, meaning that these are difficult things to do. They're small things, but they're difficult. How many people push away a second plate of food? How many people refuse to take a smoke because it is not healthy for you or the people in your vicinity, in your family? How many people step back and use their teeth, their lips, their mouth as a door and double door, your teeth and your lips are double door to what you say, and keep it inside if it's going to be hurtful to another person? That is a small thing that you can do. Small things like thinking about the other person, or as I was recently reading, listening, learning the techniques and tools of good listening skills so that another person — I'm not so good at this, I've broken in quite a bit in the conversations today — we can listen to what the other person has to say fully and completely so they can finish their thoughts and express themselves and then respond. It might mean that you have to just write down some notes while you're listening so that you don't forget what you want to say. But what that means is that you're talking in your head instead of listening to the other person. Okay, I say I'm a sinner on that one. Now, stress is the topic of our show, the last
half hour from 2:30 to 3 Eastern Time, USA, and stress is in the news quite a bit. Even recently, in Natural News, which I read quite often with Mike Adams, this is an article by Carol Ann Wright about stress. This talking about it and throwing around the term stress and what is it, and hopefully we define that when we do this show, that it is things that move us into a dysfunctional state, irritable, annoyed, bothered, discomfort. These things are stresses upon us and might mean that we might have emotional stress, physiological stress to our system, so that we're not able to act fully and completely at the soul level and fulfill our mission here on the planet. So she says that there are three stress hormones that wreak havoc on the body, and that when we're stressed, the body pumps out adrenaline, noradrenaline, and cortisol. Each is produced by the adrenaline glands, and all three trigger a sequence of 1, suppressed neurotransmitter activity, 2, endocrine system breakdown, 3, poor immunity, and 4, sluggish digestion. So that almost sounds like the autism syndrome, doesn't it? So stress in our lives is going to make us feel unwell, and we're going to have all of those negative emotions come out. We're not going to be calm and balanced and even. So I wanted to bring that to your attention, that when we have ups and downs in our life and feel tired, fatigued, exhaustion, our body is not functioning properly, and we have indigestion, all of those things are indications that we are stressed. She provides a couple of suggestions for replenishing our body, and I would say prayer is one, meditation is one, taking time out, going into nature for a little while, and she says yoga, tai chi, breathing exercises. So a lot of times I'll say while we're talking about it, have you been holding your breath? See if your shoulders are a little bit tight. Just let them relax, let them down. The weight of your shoulders drop and bring that breath into your belly. Just think about breathing completely and bringing that oxygen all the way into your body, down into your lungs, to the recesses of your lungs, so that it can circulate to all of the cells in your body. The other thing she mentions is progesterone, which encourages the production of dopamine, a feel-good neurotransmitter, with positive moods and normal sexual response. Now, you don't just go out and take progesterone. It's balanced, and in my mind, even those biodynamic chemicals that are produced, those drugs that are produced by natural pharmacies, with the progesterone and estrogen, I think the body is so finely tuned. There's so many more elements to it, into the composition of how the interaction and the synergy of those chemicals and neurotransmitters work, that I think just making food your medicine is the best idea. Then we have vitamin D, which we make when we go out for sunshine. Stress depletes this vitamin significantly, and the vitamin D helps us maintain proper blood pressure, strong antioxidant properties, and we know it is good for warding off influenza. She has glycine and GABA, two important calming neurotransmitters, tyrosine, which diminishes stress and is a precursor to the dopamine and hinders inflammation, zinc and chromium. So there's a lot of talk about zinc. I did a whole report on zinc. I will possibly make a link to it for you on the page. It is an important element for balancing our glucose levels. And we know that glucose and sugar are what drives us, what fuels our cells. But if we just take in carbohydrates and sugar directly, you're just going to blow out your system. It's too much sugar at once, and so and it also feeds cancer cells. So we know that sugar has to be looked at as almost a poison unless it is coming from our natural products like fruits and vegetables. So the last two things is vitamin B complex, which calms the nervous system and provides energy, and inositol, which helps to decrease insulin resistance and soothes depression. So there are ways that you can enhance your body with herbs and with exercise, with sunlight, with meditation, with prayer, with going into nature, with getting away from the rat race. And I also want to do a little quick reading. I've been reading the entire book, chapter by chapter, of Dr. Herbert Roberts, MD, and he was born in 1868, and he died in 1950. So it's some time ago, and he was really a major force in the world of homeopathy, in the community of homeopathy. I've been reading the book, The Principles and Art of Cure by Homeopathy, written by him, and he has also written The Study of Remedies and a book called Sensations as If, which is an incredible work to read. And in I've been reading chapter by chapter about our hereditary taints that come in, which gives us a predisposition for how we express disease. Some people might have indigestion, and other people might have migraines. Other people might have arthritis or heart disease or diabetes. So this is something that he talks about. And I just wanted to read the last part of the chapter, 24, it looks like. It's called Sora or Deficiency. And Sora is that hereditary taint that I was talking about, our propensity to certain ways of expressing our own disease state. And back in 1950 and earlier, he was talking about our food. He was talking about the minerals, essential minerals. And here's what he says. Calcium is an essential of bony structure and is a necessary, small but constant, essential of the blood. The homeopathic Materia Medica, which is the book that contains each and every remedy, and like an encyclopedia, it indicates that the calcarea group in scrofulous conditions, rickety children, large heads with open fontanelles, and a host of symptoms we have already described in those conditions traceable to this SORA, and that is P-S-O-R-A. It is a fundamental part of our heredity tendencies, which are called miasms. He says that McCollum tells us that calcium in the food is not enough, quote, human infants often develop rickets when receiving a sufficiency of calcium and phosphorus, provided they are deprived of sunlight and vitamin D. So all the way back in, probably this was written before he died, so it's probably from the 1940s or earlier, he was already talking about the need for sunlight and vitamin C, and that we cannot assimilate or metabolize these minerals in our body without all of the proper set of conditions. The last comment, provided they are deprived of sunlight, leads us to meditate upon that comment of Samuel Hahnemann, the founder of homeopathy, in relation to that hereditary taint SORA, to the effect that unnatural or unhappy surroundings are extremely dangerous to the vital energy. And there you go. He's talking about our emotions. He's talking about the state in which we live. He's talking about all of those impositions of the poor relationship dynamics and also things that we're worried and concerned about. Those can lead to actual physical symptoms in our own body. It is not necessary to compare the symptomatology of many of our remedies, homeopathic remedies, with the body elements, but to bear out our contention that the problems of this hereditary taint and deficiency are closely related. Any thoughtful student, and he's talking to homeopathic students and medical students may verify further comparisons in their homeopathic materia medica. So he's telling the students to look into the encyclopedia of remedies and compare them and see how they are related or how they are different and what is it that brings them into a group, into a particular hereditary category. In these days, one rarely, and he's talking about in his days, one rarely has the opportunity to see a patient released from emotional and economic stress into simple and natural surroundings with much outdoor life and a simple natural food supply free from adulterations and replete with the store elements direct from nature's lavish supply. So he says we need to get in touch with nature. However, if such a case is observed, one learns many things about the resilience of the human economy under the proper conditions. It leads one to a different outlook upon SORA, the hereditary taint, and its relation to the undue stress of modern life and economic conditions. Here he was also concerned and complaining about the stress of modern life and the stresses of the economic conditions and situations of his time. It's a never-ending cycle for all of us. And he says that we are resilient. Think about all the people you know who, let's say, had cancer and underwent the treatments, the surgery, the chemotherapy, the radiation, and lived to tell about it. We are resilient. And even though there are a lot of impositions and stresses in our life, in our families, in our communities, we can find ways to bounce back. We have stated repeatedly, says Dr. Herbert Roberts, that emotional strain was an important factor in developing psoriatic conditions, the inability to relax for the natural and important functions demanded by nature. Hustle and bustle take away our rhythmic, full, deep breathing. The hurry for trains, and I could insert planes, and time clocks, and I could insert internet, interferes too often with the excretory functions. How many people are blocked up whose bowels are not working properly? We know that that is a really key symptom of malhealth, of dysfunction. The demands of society lead us to suppress natural perspiration. Are you using a antiperspirant? I think he would be very much against doing so. Anxiety over almost every item of our lives gets in its dangerous work and often deprives us of necessary rest, certainly of chance moments of relaxation. So, you know, we are a population of insomniacs. We are a population that does not get 8 hours, 7-8 hours of complete sleep. So this is an important thing that we want to try to strive for. All these circumstances pressing upon a delicate adjustment of spirit, mind, and body, especially if this be predisposed by your inheritance to maladjustment, cannot but make confusion worse confounded. And at this point, if we pass on to our unborn children our inhibitions and suppressions of the spirit, mind, and flesh, what can we accept but to build for them a future lacking the ability to receive from natural sources those elements, not always measurable nor as yet defined, that are essential to health? So he's questioning it way back 100 years ago, 50, 60 years ago, and he didn't even have to deal with Monsanto. He didn't even have to deal with the depletion of our soil. He didn't have to deal with 56 vaccinations. He didn't have to deal with a lot of things, and still, he was on the right track, and he was telling us, get back to nature, get rest, relieve the stresses of our emotional conditions. And how can we do that? Each person has their own set of circumstances. That is your spirit. That is your mission. And one of the things you can do is serve, be of service to others. Let me continue with his reading before the end of time. And when we ponder that wrong living conditions, appalling plagues, and seasons of famine have been cyclic since history began, we cannot wonder at an inherited tendency to disease that Hahnemann called soric. Whether this tendency to the soric manifestations develops because of inability to assimilate or inability to relax to the point of assimilation, the end results are the same and will continue to be until corrected through more healthy and natural ways of living, plus the power of the potentized remedy to release suppressions and tune the maladjustments to order. And that is, unquote, from Dr. Herbert Roberts' Principles, The Art and Principle of Cure by Homeopathy. It is a marvelous book. It is heavy-duty reading. I've been doing reading from that for a year now. And you can go back and listen to the archives on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio and go to the groups on homeopathyworldcommunity.com to read more and learn more about homeopathy. We have just about 5 minutes, if my clock is correct, 4 minutes. And I did not give anybody a chance to call in to speak with me today. The guest call-in number is 347-324-3704. Or click that blue Skype button. There are going to be continuing shows after this one. I am not sure whether it is Eccentric Godson Rising, but I'm sure it will be a fantastic program because Freedomizer Radio is bringing you important news of the day, activism, things that you can take into your own empowerment. For instance, I do want to encourage everybody to be active on the March Against Monsanto. That is this month, May 25th, at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, everywhere on the planet, which means that it's going to be a rolling blackout, just the same way as lights out. Everybody is going to address this issue in many ways. Check on occupy-monsanto.com to look up what is happening in your state, in your capital, in your town hall, in your country, because there's going to be activities in Australia, in Belgium, in Canada, in Chile, in Colombia, in Denmark, in Ecuador, in France, and England, in Greece, in Guatemala, New Zealand, and South Africa, and Sweden, and Switzerland. And here in the United States, every single state is going to have some kind of activity on May 25th at 2 p.m. So mark your calendars and set the time aside for that. And I hope that this talk today has been helpful, has been a little bit enlightening. And if you have more questions, I did not really go very deeply into homeopathy per se, except for the philosophy and theory. I didn't give you any specific remedies to look up or study that would cover any particular issues. Next session, I think I will continue this talk about stress reduction and what remedies can be used for loss in particular, because we are, as a people, at a loss. We are losing our rights. We are separated from our spirit. We are separated from our families. And these separations we can consider loss. And instead of self-medicating, we can use homeopathic remedies, the energy of these beautiful plant, mineral, and animals. And also, there are sun energy and other kinds of moon energy that can be used. So I'm going to put on some music and I'll tune you out. So here you go. Enjoy the next show and see you next Thursday at 1 o'clock. And if you wish, you can tune into the Health In Show Monday at 11 a.m. We're going to have a special guest on a live video show.
Let freedom
Her
ring.
Her name is... Let freedom ring. We're going to have Phyllis talking about turning your lawn into an edible garden. That's the Health In Show. Check out Homeopathy World Community.
For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.